Good morning, dear friends. Thank you for joining us today to our morning roundtable discussion with the subject of Christian Science. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America, and we welcome all of you. We'll begin today with the morning prayer.
I'm reading from Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments, page 65 and 66. This is a small Watchers, Prayers, and Arguments, a smaller book. The Christian Scientist's Prayer. There is no matter and no mortal mind. God is all in all. All is harmony, health, holiness. This is the prayer unceasing to be used on all occasions and at all times. It lays the axe at the root of unreality, materiality, that forbidden tree, and cuts it down. Preserve a sacred silence on the subject of prayer. Declare daily, I am healed and scientifically healed. Christian Science is a victor, and vanquishment is unknown to omnipotent truth. I cannot be grieved or disappointed, since God is all, and my life is hid with Christ in God. There is nothing lost. Mental malpractice cannot reverse my declaration, cannot touch my conscious and unconscious thought, for there is not many minds. There is only one mind, divine mind. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 24. Watch lest the natural zeal of mortal mind cause you to believe that you can grow spiritually or spiritualize your thought in any way than by right thinking or the effort to practice Christian Science in healing. When the effort to think right ceases, growth ceases. This watching point is necessary because of the prevalence of the belief that the study of the Bible and science and health brings man growth in the understanding of truth. Does the study of a book on flying enable a man to fly? It tells him the theory, but he must put it into practice, and practice alone will bring the ability to fly. The study of the Bible and Mrs. Eddy's writings is essential, but it avails little unless it is followed by practice.
Thank you. Okay, comments.
Well, I think I fall under that category. Before I came here, I thought I was, I mean, to some degree I was, but I was more thinking that if I studied the books and read the lesson and do all that, that, you know, I wasn't putting it into practice like I am now. And it's very important. Like it says, just reading it doesn't do it. You have to practice it. And so much better at that since coming here.
Thank you. Linda?
That's what I was going to say, that coming here changed my whole concept of what Christian Science truly is, and learning how to practice it in practical ways and understand it clearly, rather than just reading the books. So I'm very grateful.
Thank you.
Well, we know that mortal mind is lazy. It wants to do the easiest possible thing that could possibly be. And obviously people get an attention or attraction to Christian Science because of its how good it is, but then they want to take the easy route. Oh, I'm just going to sit down and read. I'm not going to actually get up and do anything. But that's not the way it is. Sitting down and reading is important, but it's to get you in a frame of mind so that you can get up and do. And prove in practical ways that it really is truth by action.
Thank you.
also that if we don't refresh this doing, as you pointed out, every day, every second, then of course that's not how it works. We have to not only have the word, but we also have to have the spirit, you know, the inspired word, in order to bring this out, as Florence pointed out. You know, we have to be in that space of asking God and being with God and working with God.
Thank you.
I like the part about the right thinking, because we are thinking all the time anyway, so we might as well check what's in my thought, because really often it's the thinking that brings the experience. And if we are, as it says, a mind full of the good or God or love, cannot also have the errors, the beliefs, or actually it will be quicker to see the counterfeit when it approaches.
Thank you. Well said.
Yes, and all the books that we have, like with Carpenter and the way it's lived here, and correcting it and bringing it to your attention, where that wasn't, to me, it was just, you know, the world's view of what's sin and right or wrong. It wasn't really watching your thought and do goody. And I mean, just the exactness of what you can't get, as far as I'm concerned, from what's out there now.
Thank you. Yeah, Carpenter was instrumental in this, because he writes on how Mrs. Eddy lived the science. And I don't know whether any biography has ever done it as well as that, in his spiritual footsteps and also in precepts. So those are really invaluable tools in our study. And he says in the beginning of Footsteps, yes, we have the Bible, we have Signs and Health and Prose Works, but we also need Mrs. Eddy's example as to how we live it. And I love, you know, Tom from New York used to say, yeah, he used to study. I've quoted this before. He used to study in the morning, and then he'd get up and start to be afraid about everything. So that's the case in point, okay? You sit and study, and then you get up, and you're alarmed and fearful and negative. You've dropped everything you've learned. You're not applying it. So you will attract what you are thinking. So think the enduring, the good, and the true.
If you don't correct that wrong thinking, you can't be said to, you know, go and sin no more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the example of Daniel in the lion's den, and how he couldn't wait. He had to start thinking correctly right now when he was in the lion's den, not afterwards, not in a better season, so to speak, as they say. It has to be now, and it's the hardest time when you're in the middle of a supposed crisis to do that, but it's so rewarding because that's when you get the spirit, you know, talking to you and moving you and being you, and so it's just awesome.
Thank you.
Well, and you know, he's a good example of how it is possible to be ready all the time. You know, he prayed to his God, facing wherever he faced, three times a day.
Yeah.
He renewed his faith regularly.
So he was looking for red flags.
Well, and when you're in that state of mind, it's not even that you're looking. You just feel it. You know it.
I guess it should be just how we live, right? It's just, you know, you get to the point, you practice enough to be able to, that's how I live. Like, okay, I brush my teeth every day. Well, I'm checking my thought, making sure that it's only good that's in there.
Thank you. And Martha Wilcox says, if you do that, if you're living it moment by moment, then when something, a so-called crisis or something like that comes up, you are ready for it. You won't go into panic mode. And, you know, that's why great athletes, I'll give that example, where they rehearse and practice and practice. So when they get out on the field, it's natural, whatever they need to do, they just naturally do it. They don't have to think about it. It just is natural, right?
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's true, piano, musicians, it just becomes natural. So your practice is in your everyday living it. And we have ample opportunities to prove the omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence of our loving Father. And then when we go to sleep at night, it should be a peaceful sleep because we have faced our problems, mm-hmm. not run from them, but faced each one and go over our thought mm-hmm. and let it be at peace with God. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, Karen, for that.
You're welcome.
So now... The golden text.
Revelation. Go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now we talked about how just studying it, it's got to be more than just studying it, but now we're going to talk about studying because it's a very fast, and I don't know how many people I've worked with initially that haven't even read the textbook. I will say Mrs. Evans used to say that Christian scientists was known to be the armchair religion. By that, you just sit in your chair, your prayer chair, as she would say, and study all day and not live it. So that being said, it is also very important to study it, to know it, to know the rules, to know everything about it that you can. And as we've learned, it's ever increasing as you grow, as you change, the book more and more will be revealed to you in the book. So again, Karen sent them beautiful emails today and a few on studying the textbook. The little book, Textbook of Christian Science. Webster defines textbook as a manual of instruction. And there's an article, one by Albert Gilmore, and another one that has no author. But anyway, and the one that has no author is from the 1886 Christian Science Journal, so it was a very early one. But Albert Gilmore says, a fact which Christian scientists never lose sight is that the science and health is primarily the textbook of Christian Science. And then the definition of textbook, a manual of instruction. Obviously, a manual of instruction is a book to be studied, to be read, reread, pondered, and assimilated. Because our textbook reveals divine science, which is infinite in its range and meaning, it is to be studied unceasingly, for its treasures of truth are unfolded progressively to the spiritually awakening thought. Even if the author is said, turn constantly to its inspired pages, finding new truths as she spiritually progressed. On the universality of its message, Mrs. Eddy writes in Miscellaneous Writings, scarcely a moiety, which is a part or portion, compared with the whole of the scriptures and the Christian Science textbook, is yet assimilated spiritually by the most faithful seekers. Yet, this assimilation is indispensable to the progress of every Christian scientist. Now, what does that mean to assimilate?
Take it in, become a part of you.
Yes, thank you. It becomes a part of you. It's very important. As we study, even as you listen to these roundtables, you take it in so and practice it so it is part of you. Then you'll never worry about forgetting it. If you forget it, it's because you haven't done this. If it becomes a part of you, how could you forget it? It's also the renewing of your mind because we have been taught in this so-called mortal existence many things that are contrary to God. So you replace the false with all that is true. Now, in the second article, which was very interesting to me, written in 1886, the little book is identified as Science and Health. A discussion follows on how to eat it up so that that it becomes our life. Now you know what do they say? You are what you eat. So that's why take it and eat it up. Yes. And first it'll be very sweet and then become bitter. What does that mean?
You're being tested.
It forces
yes.
You have to let go of the material aspect of life. That has to be going on continually. See the spiritual, more of the spiritual aspect of life and letting go of the material.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the letting go of the material is not a simple letting go, is it?
No.
That's why it's bitter.
Yeah, because as the truth challenges the material beliefs that you used to believe in, they don't want to give up. They don't want to leave you. They will put up a fight. They will do their best to make your life miserable and discourage you.
And then you'll have family and friends, yeah, who will also discourage you or tell you you're crazy, just as, of course, Mrs. Eddy did.
Yeah.
And that's often very difficult, as the allegory and allegory in prose works speaks about, where you have to climb the mountain and sometimes leave things behind. And sometimes that includes people. If they are obstructing the way, and it says God will remove any obstructions, love will remove it. But you have to follow that still small voice that you're hearkening to. And in this article, it says that Science and Health is the book that's sweet to the spiritual man, but bitter to the material man. Mm-hmm. So if it seems bitter, it's because it's burning out all the materiality that we have accumulated over the years, I guess. And maybe are reluctant to give up. And then this is interesting. I've never tried studying. This article is called Systematic Study. It says, there is a line of study which can be traced throughout the book, which might be compared to Jacob's ladder. It begins with life, embracing all the harmonies of our being as the roots of the tree of life or a plant. So life is the foundation of the study of Christian Science. Without it, we cannot take the first step from matter to mind. This is the keynote of the chapter on recapitulation and contains the basic science of being. Mrs. Eddy states that we must learn the science of life in order to reach the perfection of manhood. To understand God as principle of all being and to live in accordance with his principle is the science of life. And then associated with life are substance and intelligence. These three are mentioned together in many places throughout the book, for our understanding of life changes our views as the basis of substance and intelligence from matter to spirit. Taking the study this way, there will be no personal preferences, but your course will be according to principle. Life is dwelt on in all its phases, its beauty, purity, harmony, and loveliness. The chapters on science of being and footsteps of truth are full of life. In physiology, there is less. In recapitulation, as before stated, life is the keynote. When we come to the chapters on healing and teaching and creation, it is like lifting the curtain and taking a fairy peep. For we see the vast mountains of rocks, the heights and the depths of thought in regard to life. In the chapter on Genesis, we find the trees, flowers, and waters are the beauty of life. This is the only basis, but what a wonderful basis it is. So I thought, wow, that's quite a systematic study, right? Both, I guess, looking for the synonyms and perhaps keeping a journal, but only in as much as it helps you become a better Christian Scientist, only in as much as it helps you become a better healer. If it's just an intellectual study, it's blah, blah, blah. So whatever you do, feel inspired by it. And that's what I can tell. You know, it must never be a duty. You must say, oh, I got to read Science and Health. I got to read this. I got to do this today. No, 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 no. You should look forward to it. It should be wonderful. It's your time alone with God to read about Him, to read about your Creator, and to read about yourself, to read about the wonderful stories in the Bible where they overcame so many material laws. It should be an exciting, peaceful, happy time spent with your Father. And of course, not too much, not too little either. Mrs. Eddy says take how many hours a day?
Four.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we don't have to do this work. We get to do this work.
Thank you. Yeah. Shouldn't be some awful duty that you have just click off, you know, oh, I did this, I've done that. And I have, there are times I've approached it like that. It doesn't work. It's a bad way to do it. You've got to do it out of love for God and wanting to spend time with Him and wanting to know more about Him and His people. And then your daily study will be divinely guided. And it will be very wonderful. But Mrs. Eddy, in the textbook, she tells you, right? You can't take a perusal of the book. You can't skim over it. It must be studied. Bruce?
Well, I was just remembering somebody described what it was like in Mrs. Eddy's home. So they spent, I believe it was the morning hours, and it was multiple hours in study, prayer, etc. And then when that time was up, then they had a full day's work ahead of them. But because of the prayer and study they had done before, they went through the full day's work very quickly and accomplished all that was needed, and they lacked nothing.
It's wonderful. And if you are assimilating it, if you're really taking it in, it does affect your whole day. Your day will be glorious. And if you have challenges, you will be able to meet them well. And you won't fall down in despair.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you'll have time for every right thing.
You mm-hmm. will.
And this example was consistent with the watching point we just heard. There was reading and studying, and there was the work that went with it.
Yes, and this is so thoroughly explained in Mary Baker Eddy, Your Spiritual Footsteps. The prayer, the watching that they did, and then they would have to demonstrate their daily tasks and chores every day. Demonstrate. Food had to be done correctly. The cleaning, everything had to be done with God. Demonstrated. And so, as I've said before, try to keep your life as best you can as a day in Mrs. Eddy's home. I know many of you go off to work, but that's okay. It's still a time to keep God with you in whatever it is, all your meetings with people, whatever it is you're trying to do. Chardell?
Oh, no, I was just saying, it's exactly right. Whatever you're doing,
whatever you're doing, do it with Christ. Do it, yes, thank you.
Yeah, God is your employer, and your role is to bless.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
That's very good.
Also in science. And
Judge Hannah.
Bruce, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, in Science and Health, it says mind rests in action. So when you go about your work, you don't go about it with a heavy sense of it being work. You go about with a joyous sense of God is leading the way and I'm following gladly. And you can be productive that way.
Thank you. That hymn, I walk with love along the road, His strength He will renew. And it's just the idea about taking God to every task, and He'll bless it with a song or something. It's a very beautiful hymn. I don't know the number, but I love that one. Okay, go ahead. Who else was trying to speak?
I was going to say that Judge Hannah, Mrs. Eddy relied on Judge Hannah for a lot. And she gave him a lot to do. And he came to her once and said, you know, asked if he was so exhausted, so felt overwhelmed by what he was doing, that he asked Mrs. Eddy if she could relieve him of some of his duties. And rather than do that, she told him to study more, spend more time with God. And then when he started doing that, he didn't need to be relieved of what he was doing. He was free of that.
Thank you. I think that's in, you know, we have something age. It starts out with the importance of spending that time every day working for yourself. Don't neglect that in all the work we do for others and for the world. But charity begins at home. So work for yourself first and then outward. Who else was trying to speak?
Yes, Bicknell Young's article on Day is very instructional and inspirational about how to conduct your day and exactly what's been stated. He states in there, we have one thing to do today, and that is to know the truth. And as we do that, then everything else just falls into place.
Thank you. Yes, I don't know how many times I think about that, but we have one thing to do, and that's to know the truth. That's all. Remember, wherever you are, you need to know the truth about every situation that comes to you. Thank you. So this article goes on about truth. The next in line of study is truth, that clear-cut, refined sense, exact, just, and infinite in perfection, which is heaven to know, like the clear, frosty air of a dawn in the autumn, when the stars shine in the heavens like diamonds and everything is distinctly outlined. How beautiful that is. And then love, being the highest in the line of study, is like the flower of the fruit. So, and then it talks about the necessary to study the Bible in the same way. But I think the main thing is whatever you do and however you study is to be inspired to learn more about God and his wonderful creation, and to assimilate the truth, renew your mind, cast off the old for the new, and it will form you anew, and your whole life will be transformed. You will. Everything about your life will get better as your thought ascends. It's a law. And as you live this life. So, in another article called While the Bridegroom Tarried by Violet Kersemere. It says, the Revelator tells us to take the little book and eat it up. Christian Science feeds the famished spiritual sense in proportion as the student realizes his at-one-ment with God. Only through profound humility, unspeakable gratitude, in knowing that God is indeed all in all, is that warm, pure sense of at-one-ment attained, that close, safe shelter of love realized. Thus, every page is illumined, and love's message rises in his consciousness with healing in his wings. So, and always, what is that? That is the ultimate goal, right? To be feeling your oneness with God. Everything's possible to him. I and my Father are one. Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works, and the Father hath not left me alone. And that is demonstration of Christian Science.
And that's what it means to dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Yeah, to stay in that consciousness. That's why stay in your Father's house. And I have seen that in so many articles. So many people talk about it. So anyway, and it goes on, which I thought was interesting in this article, about patience, untinged by resignation, is a spiritual steadfast quality which abides through long watches and is at last crowned with a joy of demonstration. So, guess what? In our, let me turn to my pages, Virtue Medicine, which we have discuss gratitude, courage, forgiveness, awe, honesty, joy, generosity, charity, love, optimism, hope, healing of resentment, beauty, humility. The next one is patience. And these are, I consider, God's preparations of the sick are potions of his own qualities. When you live this, now we're talking about living the Christian Science by expressing all these virtues, it brings healing to your body, as we've talked about on these various topics. The definition of virtue is strength, moral goodness, the practice of moral duties and the abstaining from vice, the practice of moral duties from sincere love of God and his laws. And then this quote, virtue is nothing but voluntary obedience to truth. Mm-hmm. And remember in the story, the healing of the woman with the issue of blood, when she touched him, it said virtue had gone out of him, which I find interesting, his moral goodness. So anyway, in this article about patience, it talks about it being a healing attribute. And it starts off, at 17, I left the United States for a gap year on a small farm in rural Mexico when I discovered a different relationship with time. Our evening bread didn't come from a plastic bag. It came from a clay oven that took hours to heat and dough that was kneaded at dawn. Kneaded with a K-N-E-A-D-D. Anyway, dinner might begin months earlier with tending the land and planting seeds. If the rains came and the sun held steady, a meal would eventually grow. Everything had its season. Nothing could be rushed, and every bite was cherished. It was during this time that I first learned of the Chinese saying, when the melon ripens, it falls from the stem. Not when you want it to, not when you shake the vine, only when it's ready, and then it is most delicious. Some things simply can't be forced. Sometimes our only option is patience. Today we impulsively flick through the screens, track packages in real time, and flinch when anything takes longer than it should. One study even found that if an Amazon page loads 1 second slower, it costs the company $1.6 billion a year. We've commodified time and designed entire systems to eliminate waiting. We are a society eating unripened melons. Patience is a destructive emotion that undermines mental health and, as research suggests, may be stealing years from our lives, one rushed moment at a time. Remember, rushing around smartly is no proof of accomplishing much. Mary Baker Eddy. And boy, oh boy, is that true. You know, everything has to happen yesterday. And if it's not, impatience comes over, or it can. And this article brings out that a lot of people who have that problem have
hypertension.
Thank you. High blood pressure. What's that?
And other things, not just high blood pressure.
Yes, other things too. And it also leads to anger, bursts of anger. So that statement, patience is a virtue, is very important. It says, and it goes into some medical things, which I won't read, but the person who can't stand a 2-minute wait may also be likely to skip meditation, procrastinate on sleep, or reach for fast foods. Meanwhile, a patient person might sip tea mindfully during the wait, cook a balanced meal, and sleep better. So it states patience is preventative medicine. But it also goes on, and this is very important. In some instances, impatience is beneficial when you need to move things along or to speak out. Because sometimes you can think you're being patient, but you're just being cowardly. No one can have a good life without practicing some sort of patience. Good things take time. And this is quoting someone that I can't pronounce his name. But anyway, yet he offers an important caveat. Patience without discernment can become passivity. The goal isn't to wait endlessly, but to wait skillfully. Consider patience as one essential ingredient in a balanced life. While patience remains indispensable, it doesn't exist independently of other virtues. We need courage to act, compassion to connect with others, and wisdom to know when to wait and when to go forward. Patience allows things to nourish and bloom. It fosters empathy through attentive listening, gratitude by savoring slow moments, and legacy by planting trees you'll never sit under. So, good to think about. And when, you know, when we have any kind of a difficulty, you ask yourself, what virtue do I need to be expressing? God's patience. And there was a quote too, I forget, I don't know, it's something about nature never rushes, but everything gets done in time. That's not an exact quote, but it's very close. You can't rush nature. Then there is that beautiful story, the story of the hickory tree. I don't know if you know that. It's on our website. But the hickory tree just took a long time to grow its leaves. And all the carrying on and why, what's the matter with you? Doesn't help it along. And that the point of the story is that sometimes true with people. You know, now sometimes with little children, if they don't do something at a certain age, they get diagnosed with all these problems. Right. I have two teachers here who know.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Yes, and children, and many of the children who were diagnosed, like I was a teacher for a long time, they do exceptional things. They were diagnosed, and they were said they would never do anything. One of them has a doctorate now of education. And they said she would never accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. And two boys I know, too. And they're doing very well. And some people in education, you can't admonish everybody because some people did help them.
Yes,
along
yes,
the way.
Of course, yes.
And that diagnosis is nothing more than somebody's opinion.
That's it.
And it's a useless, what a thing to label anybody with.
Absolutely. So, and I wish I knew more of this as a young mother, because people were telling me things about, you know, my children and got me all uptight and worried about if something was the matter, and there was nothing the matter. It took longer. I told the story, you know, my son in kindergarten, the teacher asked, "Who wants to learn to read?" Everybody raised their hand but him. And then he said, "Who doesn't want to read?" He raised his hand. He said, "I like playing." And so they kept him back here. And that was fine. But now you have to rip books out of his hand. He loves to read. But at the time, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. My son doesn't want to read. What's going to happen to him? So
that's funny, too, because I'm sure you were teaching him to be honest, and he was.
That's right. He didn't care what everyone else said. So the point being patience and not to all these diagnoses. And then maybe the worst thing, then they put him on some kind of a drug.
Right.
No, thank you. We're not going there, and we don't have to. So patience, a virtue. Think about it.
It's not appreciating their individuality either.
No.
Right. Everyone blossoms in their own way and in their own time.
Yes.
And isn't that great that everybody is unique and different from everybody else?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the child you think isn't, maybe he's not speaking, but he's learning other things. You can see if you look in their eyes, they're observing, they're doing other things. And it all comes around, but thank goodness we are all unique. Mm-hmm. So that story of the hickory tree, if you don't know it, it's on our website, right?
It is.
Gary, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes kids don't speak also because they know no one's listening. So that's an important consideration.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Like Jeremy.
Right? Yeah. He, I talked to
him. Now he talks, but for a long time when he was little, no one was listening.
And another thing, sometimes children don't speak because they know the judgment that's coming with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It is cruel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
True.
All right, Nancy, with your contribution.
Yes, I found a beautiful article called The False Way and the True by Dazette Stocking. It was from a 1894 journal. I'll sum up the beginning of it. It's of a little child that went and stood at the door of a beautiful palace, and she was so taken by the what looked like magic within, all colors and flowers and beautiful aromas. And there was a voice urging her to come in. But there was another gentle, quieter voice that was telling her not to go in, that it was not a good place to be. She didn't listen, as we often do not do. And she did go in, and she was bitten by a serpent many times. But the voice would still say, oh, just keep going. There's no more serpents. Just try another flower. And every time she experienced sorrow or pain or disappointment. And at the end of this, going through this palace, she came out an old woman, faded and wrinkled and sad. And as she was coming down the steps, she saw a woman standing there before her with the face like an immortal. And she said, who art thou, O glorious revelation? And in accents of glowing tenderness came the answer. My name is Science. I wait for thee in love. Yonder is the palace of human belief. When thou didst desire to enter it, I warned thee. But when thou couldst not believe me, thou didst go in to find for thyself that all therein is false. If thou couldst have listened to my word, this pain would have been spared thee. The flowers are self-will, self-love, personality, passion, flattery, ambition, admiration, and pride and vanity, pleasures of sense. If thou stoop to inhale the atmosphere of any of these, you must feel the sharp sting of betrayal, pain, wounds, and disappointment. Oh, henceforth, place thy hand in mine, thou child of God, and I will show thee the secret place of the Most High. Set not thy mind on things on the earth, for spirit fills thy desire, and before thee is spread all the fairness of thy Creator's universe. If thou wilt but lift thy gaze above matter and to the eternal sunshine of mind's celestial day, waste not one thought on the illusions of time, sense, and mortality. Not one of their pleasures is real, but I, divine science, if thou follow me, will show thee that man is the image of his God, and that all things are put under his feet. Under the rays of infinite truth, thou shalt see thy sorrow, thyself, thy sin, thy pain melt away, and thou shalt know that thy disappointed desire was only an elusive dream, for love has supplied all thy need. And I thought that was Christian Science perfectly.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
And we can be so grateful we have, all of us here have this Christian Science. My goodness, the open door to every good thing. So that is a beautiful story. And that is a story Mrs. Evans used to tell us all the time. I had no idea where the source was, however, but she talked about a woman going into a room that seemed very alluring and sniffing flowers, and she ended up coming out an old lady. But this is beautiful and much more complete. And it is on our website, right?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
1894. And that, I believe that Daisette Stocking, she married William McKinley.
Yes.
After a 10-year courtship. And eventually they formed the First Church of Christ Scientists, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And that is where Gary and I met in Sunday school. A bit of trivia. But anyway, I was so interested in that because I had attended that church. I had no idea the history of it. And they must have lived in Cambridge. And, you know, I feel like sometimes we walk the paths that the great saints have trod. And McKinley is the president, I guess. Yeah. McKinsey. He wrote some articles. Yeah. We have McKinsey, we have McCracken.
And he wrote some poems that have been put to song in our hymnal.
Yes, yes. They were wonderful workers.
Yesterday was a quote from McKinsey.
Oh, then read it for us.
Good workers can live with themselves in calm confidence and such joy of kind-heartedness that they become peace bringers to others. It's a lovely thought.
That is a lovely thought. And that's William McKinley.
Yeah.
There again, that's living the virtues. And when you live those virtues, you bring them to others. So, and they feel that. They feel that. And that's living your science and not just reading about it.
And William McKinley stayed faithful to Mary Baker Eddy and to Christian Science when many others, after Mrs. Eddy's passing, were tested, and some stood and some did not. But he did.
Thank you. And Bruce has become our historian because he's been reading and recording so many of these biographies about Mary Baker Eddy. And it's good to know who was able to stand, and also who was able to stand after she left, when the malpractice and the uproar and everything became so vehement and difficult. Those who stood were quite the workers. All right. Well, thank you so much for that, Nancy. That was just beautiful.
You're welcome.
All right. Now we will go to Chardell.
This is called Christian Science is Dynamic by Bicknell Young. I'll just read a few excerpts. Christian Science is dynamic. It is alive and pulsating with the power, presence, and intelligence of divine love. The statement, love is reflected in love, is a dynamic remark. Mary Baker Eddy's writings contain countless examples of such calls to action. Love is not static. It is not passive, dormant, or inactive. It is eager, joyous, glad. It is always sprightly, glowing, fervent, alive. Mrs. Eddy wrote, "The vital part of the heart and soul of Christian Science is love. This is another way of assuring us that we are to live. We must be loving now. There's no such thing as love was or love will be."
And read that next paragraph. Do you have it?
Oh, you want it? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's often a test.
It's often a test of one's understanding of Christian Science and one's ability to practice it to love one's neighbor as oneself. When the neighbor has been unjust or in any way malicious and perhaps brought upon some hardship, but it must be accomplished if one is to be a worthy follower of the master Christian. Shall I continue?
Mm-hmm. But to the, you know, what
to the other one. Okay. The Bible relates that the Apostle John, in his extreme old age, when he went to the gatherings of early Christians and was asked to speak to them from the abundance of his experience, he always said, "Little children, love one another." Without love, Christian Science is a jumble of words without deed, and it cannot survive. This is a quote now. "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God.
Thank you. And that is the living of it, isn't it? In our daily deeds and our love. And, you know, Carol wrote that beautiful watch message Thursday night, which really got to the bottom of a lot of issues. You know, God doesn't know race, gender, or anything else. He only knows his creation, which he loves impartially. And all this fussing and fighting over this, that, or the next thing, or wanting something someone else has instead of being grateful for what you have and making your own palace divine, so to speak. Anyway, love one another. And dear John knew the importance of it. And that is the basis of Christian Science. If you don't love, you can't claim to be a Christian Scientist. And that's a divine love that you can reflect, because nobody has it on their own. It's a reflection. And then from Max Dunaway, this poem: a man toiled selflessly 2,000 years ago and gave the world a truth nothing can overthrow. Denying that the works of his own self were wrought, he pointed ever to the principle he taught. The years went by, and then at last, in our own day, another lived who trod the master's faithful way. She too from personality forever turned to bring to men the holy science she discerned. How now, my friends, shall we serve those who served, who best served men, by worshiping their personality again? Ah, no, they would not have it so, and we should not, but worship God, the perfect principle that they taught. And now we will end.
With an excerpt from an article entitled "The Still Small Voice" from the May 1896 journal. And the author has initials S, B, and D. And this author writes, "The psalmist sang, 'The voice of the Lord shaketh the wilderness.' He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The prophet Isaiah heard the voice heralding the glory of the Lord and the good tidings of good to all peoples under the spiritual reign of the Messiah, the Prince of Peace, foretelling the mortality of error and the immortality of truth." And that's Isaiah 40, verses 3 to 8. The discoverer and founder of Christian Science, Reverend Mary Baker Eddy, speaks of voices not our own, retrospection and introspection, which came to her awakening child thought, gently preparing her for those deep experiences through which she was to learn life's great lesson and become the bearer of a message of love to suffering humanity. Like Samuel of old, she responded to these calls, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." And God has spoken through her to this age and to all mankind in a voice not to be mistaken. Science and health, with key to the scriptures, is this voice. In response to the demand for a more scientific and practical Christianity, and as a fulfillment of prophecy, this little book has appeared as the still small voice of scientific thought, quieting the restlessness of the human mind by fixing it on immutable truth. Its keynote is the supremacy of mind. It speaks of an influence ever present in human consciousness to heal and save, and calls the world to demonstrate it. Its mission is to restore the lost art of Christian healing, which was the foundation of primitive Christianity. The voice of this herald of Christian Science reaches over land and sea. The 105th edition, recently issued, is both a triumph and a prophecy of the influence of this silent messenger in the coming centuries. End quote.
Thank you all very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.